Okay, I'm feeling secure about this episode.
I mean, yeah, I had a little bit of anxiety going into it, but I feel great now.
Also, we had a bit of a recording issue this week, so our apologies in advance for Dylan's audio.
There are a lot of things in my life that I wish I knew about sooner, and attachment styles is one of them. I can think back to so many dating and relationship dynamics I found myself in and enacting and reenacting over the years, and it would have been helpful to understand why I was acting the ways I was or repeating certain patterns. It also would have been helpful to understand that we all deserve some grace and understanding and healing when it comes to our attachment styles. Because when we're talking about attachment styles, what we're really talking about are attachment wounds. Today on Dear Queer, we're talking about attachment styles. This is part one of two.
Love it. So your intro is through in dating, but it's like my understanding of attachment styles is, okay, in your childhood, like the stuff it comes down to simply is like, did you have your needs met? And based on your particular upbringing and what was going on, different types of attachment styles kind of come through and yeah.
Yeah, it is based on those beginnings for us, right? Like mm-hmm. at its core, like you said, if our needs were being met and how we attached to our caregivers or caregiver, right? And I have a piece in something I wrote that just came to mind where I basically sum it up saying like how we were loved early on shapes how we love later on.
That's right? Really beautiful.
So that idea that like, yeah, how we learn to connect and mm-hmm. if we felt connected or not, or if it was inconsistent or not, all those things shape how we then try and connect later on. And like those are those triggers and those buttons mm-hmm. that can get push that make us feel unsafe again.
Yeah.
If we felt unsafe before.
Should we just dive in? Like, do you know your attachment style? Are we sharing?
Yeah, we'll share. We'll share. I mean, I've definitely been leaned more towards anxiously attached, but I've also sought out a lot of avoidantly attached people or emotionally unavailable people.
Okay.
As part of my anxious wounding, almost to like just keep reenacting that that story, right? Yeah. But I mean, I also know I've been avoidant at times, and I also know that the core of like there's overlap. So anxiously attached, you are avoidant in some way, because especially if you're seeking out partners who can't give you those things that you need, then that's kind of avoidance. You're not kind of seeking out the healthy thing. And then vice versa, there's a core of anxiety in avoidance as well. So like there is way more commonality than it looks like on the outside because it's expressed so differently. Avoidance is usually like withdrawal, maybe no like lack of communication. Versus anxiety is very obvious and loud sometimes.
Yeah, so my understanding is there's kind of four main attachment styles. Maybe I'll read them. I wrote them down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
So we've got the anxious preoccupied. Mm-hmm. So relationships can actually make you feel unsafe or insecure. Probably have some sort of abandonment fears. I'm just going to give we're going to get Dylan notes. In here to help us with this, but I'm just giving the 10,000 foot view. Then there's the fearful avoidant. And so in that sense, relationships might feel more like chaotic or overwhelming. And the dismissive avoidant. And so those ones can kind of make you're more inclined to kind of pull away from relationships. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the gold standard of secure attached.
Oh, man. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, the hope in all of this, though, is that you can heal your attachment style. And it's not always so clear cut. Like you can have, depending on who you're with and stuff, more of one thing can kind of show itself. But it is possible to become more securely attached, and I have been working on that.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of with all things. It's like you're moving towards stuff, and like maybe if you're tired or overworked or, you know, haven't been, taking care of yourself, maybe if you have a undercurrent of a more fearful or avoidant attachment style, those can bubble up. But when, you know, those things are kind of humming along, then you can kind of maybe, hopefully, fall into the more secure attached styles.
Yeah, and it does take a lot of work in some cases. Mm-hmm. Because you're undoing such a strongly embedded narrative.
Yes.
So you're having to try and make a distinction between the reality of the situation you're in, mm-hmm. and the story that you've just been telling yourself. So one thing I've learned over the years is the difference between reacting and responding. Mm. And like reacting is that maybe that knee jerk fear of abandonment,
yep.
or pulling away or whatever it is that you do in that like knee jerk response. That's mm-hmm. a reaction.
Yeah.
And that's a reaction based on your own wounding versus responding, which might take some time to process. And just to make the distinction between, okay, am I reacting to something they said or did, or sure. is this just triggering the story that I've always told myself?
Right.
And so being able to make that distinction, actually respond to the reality of the moment, mm-hmm. and that dynamic in relationship versus reacting based on your wounding.
Yeah. A big wound that I have been trying to work through and in relationship work through is like my first, and I might get this wrong, so you might have to correct it, but my first reaction is usually defensiveness, because I have such a fear of, you know, letting someone down. It's probably, you know, circle back people pleaser.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's like I always jump to like, oh, I don't want them to think I don't care or I didn't do this thing or all this other stuff. And so my default mode or reaction mm-hmm. is usually defensiveness, when really if I just like take a minute, slow down, then I can get to it. It's like, oh, they're like, they just have this feeling. That's great. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And just even recognizing that defensiveness as being like your go-to, mm-hmm. then you can take that. Then you can react to it differently and be like, okay, I'm feeling it. I want to be defensive here, but like, what's the reality of the situation rather than that kind of like that just immediate response?
Oh, it's like when the doctor, I don't think they do this anymore, when they like tap your knee and I'm just like, oh, defense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, that's the thing. It's your reflex.
Yeah.
It really is your reflex. And so it's hard to train that out of us, mm-hmm. but like, more we can redo that narrative, then mm-hmm. the less we'll even have to do that, because we'll naturally be responding, more likely to respond than just react, or at least recognize mm-hmm. our tendencies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should say this stuff is all just from like, I don't know. Obviously we're not experts, but it's coming from, you know, we've done therapy, we share a Reiki,
we've read all the attached and polysecure and all that.
All the books.
Yeah.
Or just therapizing with our friends.
Yeah. Oh man, it just sucks when you still get it wrong.
Why is it we like always go back? There's such like we carve such deep grooves of always go for this type of attachment or this trait that's like
Yeah, and then each time, I guess it, hopefully, at least I know I've had this where you just kind of keep uncovering, like, you think you're not telling yourself that mm-hmm. story anymore, and then you end up doing something and then reflect on it and you're like, that's because I was still telling myself that story. Mm-hmm. That still stemmed from that. So it's hard to check ourselves, and it might be one of those things where in the moment you can't check yourself. Mm-hmm. And then once you've kind of settled down or just like have a second for that stress response to like chill out, mm-hmm. then you can see it and say, okay, I see what I did there, and like repair it afterwards, where it's a conversation where you can recognize like, I know why I did that or said that, and it came from this place, and that wasn't fair to you, or whatever the conversation needs to be. But like, and then, I mean, hopefully that ends up being something that if you are dating someone or your partner, then understands you better and knows that that's your go-to
response and to kind of, yeah, be soft with you around things that might do that.
Mm-hmm. Should we go to Dylan to give kind of a little more in-depth view of all these things we're talking about?
Yes, for sure.
How are you? Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. I'm good. I'm good. How are you guys?
Oh, great. Well, I'll let Elena kick it off.
All right. So we've got a series of questions for you today, Dylan. So as you know, we're talking about attachment styles. We've been sort of talking through our own experiences with it, and we just want to know what you have to say in terms of your what sort of expert help you can give us here. So first of all, how would you explain what an attachment style is?
Good question. An attachment style can mean a lot of things. So I'm going to run through some of those and then try and kind of like piece it together. So for me, an attachment style is our fears, our desires, and our expectations that we have in relationship with others. It's the way that our brains and bodies interpret and react to what happens in our relationships. It defines the scope of what we come to believe is possible in close relationships. It's how we make sense of another's behavior towards us within relationships. It's the relative sense of safety or threat that we feel. It's the way that we seek proximity to or distance from another in various relational contexts. So at its core, an attachment style is the way we come to make sense of our need for safety and security within our relationships.
Those are so good, Dylan. Like, because that is how we see, like, all those specifics you gave were so perfect because, like you said, things like our needs, but also our expectations, like, or our fears and our expectations. I love that those are both included, and the desire for proximity or not, and like all of those ways, or even how it feels in our body. This is something that I've come to recognize over time, like what anxiety feels like in my body, because, and being able to distinguish like, okay, so this is the response I'm having right now. And it's like, it's not just an emotional thing. It's not just a story we tell ourselves, but it's also literally lives in our body. Which is so, thank you for pointing that out. That was amazing.
Yeah, we were definitely stumbling.
I just want to comment on more about this biological element. I think it's also so important to recognize it because we can so easily feel like shame around how we respond, right? Or how we react. We can feel shame about like needing something or like needing reassurance. Or we can feel shame about pulling away and that's all what we always do or whatever. But like recognizing that it is kind of, we're fighting some hardwiring, like we're fighting something that is so deeply embedded in us. So there shouldn't be any shame around acknowledging that. Like there is this biological, physiological element, and it's not something we need to, you know, be shy about admitting or recognizing, right? Is it possible to have multiple attachment styles? Does it change over time? Can we shift on that spectrum between those four?
Absolutely, yeah. The term attachment style is actually a bit contentious because it implies that we only have one way of being in a relationship. And in mainstream culture, attachment styles have kind of taken on a similar place to like sun signs in astrology, right? Identifying with like a single all encapsulating identity in their personalities. So for me, it would be like, God, I'm such a Virgo, it's exhausting to be so detail-oriented. It's natural that we as humans crave these kind of shorthands for understanding ourselves and others, but we lose a ton of important nuance and complexity when we reduce ourselves to these single words.
Yeah, I always try and see them as a guide, even with the, it's interesting, is like, yeah, I definitely compare it to astrology, but the way I try and look at astrology or attachment styles or things like that, it's like when everything is operating well, or this is what could be, but then if you become dysregulated or this or that, then other things can creep in, and it's all relative.
Yeah, and different people or different situations can activate different parts of our attachment dot. Completely restricted to one way. And it's all based on like past experience informing present experience, right? So if someone in your present reminds you of like a significant experience from your past, like that might have implications for how you experience attachment towards them. And it might be totally different than how you understand like what your attachment style is. So it's really context and it can change over the lifespan, and usually does.
Yeah, right. We get really attached to our attachments.
Yeah, we do. We do. Why do you think it's important for people to know their attachment style? Like, in what ways can it be helpful to them in their relationships or just life in general?
Should that partner or person get their partners to put on read receipts?
Right. Yeah. But I mean, what you're saying is that difference between what is the truth in this situation and what is the story. Right? Or like, and I know the story I'm telling myself, but the truth might not actually match that. Like, it might not be that they hate me. It could be that they're in the middle of a meeting and I just have to give them the benefit of the doubt and not make the two things match, not make it so that I feel like they hate me because I am inherently unlovable or abandonable or whatever.
It's a self-protective behavior in that case, right? Because it's scarier to kind of entertain the idea that someone doesn't hate you and just to be constantly like anticipating that than to just kind of resign yourself to that and, you know, terminate the connection. Yeah.
Right. Also, I think it's helpful. So you referred to insecure attachment styles. And I think that's, now I'm just thinking about it, we would talk about kind of avoidant and anxious and all that stuff, but maybe it's more helpful to think about it in terms of secure and insecure, because often we pit anxious and avoidant against one another and often villainize the avoidant attachment style when, as we said in our conversation before we came to you, that there is overlap. Like, avoidants are anxious, and anxiously attached people are avoidant on some level too. So like, there is overlap, but we often kind of pit the two as being in opposition. So I wonder if it is more helpful to talk about like secure attachment and insecure attachment styles and understanding that there is a lot of commonality.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I think that also helps us kind of fight against this like labeling phenomenon where people are identifying with like a specific style. Because, yeah, the probability is that you're actually some combination. And none of them should have, like, a value judgment attached on them, because these are things that are beyond our control, start really early in our developmental experiences, and ultimately need a lot of compassion to transform.
Right. And how can we shift our attachment style if we are in the insecure realm? How do we try and shift to be more securely attached?
Yeah, great question. I mean, that bit of self-awareness that we were talking about before is obviously really important. And, you know, you can strive for that through like your own research, learning about attachment styles. I may be biased, but going to therapy is a great option if that's accessible to you. Just to, yeah, have someone who isn't embedded in your experience help guide you through the kind of, the consciousness of it, and maybe help you see things in a way that, you know, can't because of your blind spot, which we all have.
Another question I didn't have on there, but the last one I feel like we sort of covered, but another question that just came to me, like we're talking about attachment styles a lot in relation to like dating and our love lives, mm-hmm. but is it possible that our attachment styles also get kind of exposed and play out in friendships and things like that as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. Any sort of significant, like emotionally meaningful relationship is the arena of attachment. So that can be like immediate family, that can be some other form of caregiver, that can be siblings, that can be friends, that can be colleagues, that can be so many things. And actually, in her book, Polysecure, which came out a couple of years ago, Jessica Byrne talks a lot about attachment style in terms of monogamy and conventional non-monogamy. And she puts forth this idea of nested attachment, where not only do we experience attachment in relation to significant others, but also the self, the community, the culture, like there are the world at large, like there are all these kind of layers to it. Mm-hmm. And attachment is there in all of them. So it's not definitely not restricted to, like, you know, who your romantic partner or partners.
I mean, that's a great point, that nesting, because fundamentally it's ourselves telling ourselves a story. And so if it's something we already believe, we're going to see it in other places, whether it's like, I don't belong there, they're going to abandon me, I don't belong there either. Like, it's just, it's all opportunity for us to confirm our greatest fears that we have told ourselves is our truth. Yeah.
What attachment style is FOMO?
Oh, yeah, FOMO. I don't know. Is that anxious? Is that insecure? That's definitely insecure, I guess. Yeah. Awesome.
Anything on your list or in your like that you wanted to share or add to leave folks with?
I mean, I know it can feel really daunting when we start to get acquainted with our own attachment style as like, you know, how do I change this? Like, am I doomed here? The nice answer is no, you're not doomed. And, you know, like attachment frameworks begin to take form in the brain before we even develop the capacity for like conscious memory, language, because we are a baby trying to survive.
Yeah.
That's when attachment begins in the brain. It's kind of scary to think about. Mm-hmm. Really fascinating. Mm-hmm. And then also in our present moments, in interactions with other people, those attachment frameworks get activated in the brain hundreds of milliseconds before our perception of the interaction reaches our conscious awareness. So with those two things in mind, it can really seem as though the cards are stacked against us in terms of like what we're stuck with and what is possible for us when it comes to attachment. But, you know, reparative experiences in relationship have the ability to heal our attachment wounds because the brain remains plastic. Miraculously, beautifully plastic, and it's not the synthetic material, it's just malleable. You know, these experiences are not written in stone, they're just written in mushy brain matter that can actually be transformed, and new neural pathways can be forged. So it is not a light sentence, and the change is possible.
I love that. I think that's, we were talking about how sometimes it's, you know, those first responses, like maybe if we're in an argument or something and we lead with defensiveness or something else, and sometimes they can feel outside of you. You're like, I don't even know why I said that. I just said the thing. And it's like, yeah, exactly. And so I love that you mentioned that. Yeah.
Amazing. That was perfect. Thank you so much, Dylan. It's always amazing having you on. And yeah, thanks for lending all your wisdom and knowledge to this conversation.
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah. That
was amazing. It's like, yeah, he kind of just like pulls everything together.
Join us again next week for part two of Attachment Theory.
Dear Queer.
This has been another episode of Dear Queer. Just a reminder, we are not actually experts. Any advice given should actually come from our experts, who we will bring in from time to time. Music brought to you by Sean Patrick Brennan, produced by myself, Lauren Hogarth, and your host, as always, Elena Papianis. I'm getting that.